Roy with ThrillMen.com, a digital comics site that my friend John Rogers and I set up about 3 years ago. How many of you have actually visited ThrillMen or are familiar with it? We'll get you there. It's all good. Was that a yes or a no? It's okay. Okay, good. So I don't have to explain what it is we do, which is that we've been putting online comics up designed specifically for the web using sort of these kind of techniques that you can't really duplicate in print, right? And sort of nice, interesting storytelling stuff like this or like that. There's a bunch of good examples of stuff that the colors are all off here, but yes,
you get the idea.
All you're doing is turning the page. It's all you're doing is you're just, you know, the same as if you were reading a book. You're just flipping through, and you have that sort of effect. Here's another good example, actually. I like this one from the Damnation of Charlie Wormwood. You know, and again, in print, it looks like that, and that's fine, and it still tells the story, but I like the step-by-step aspect of it. Or here's another really. This is from James. I'll go over all this stuff, but this is kind of setting you up with techniques. This is James Tynan's House on the Wall, which again, a really good use of that sort of step by step, where every page can be a surprise, like so. So that gives you some idea of what we've been doing in terms of technique. And we're still experimenting, we're still playing around. The North Star philosophy with ThrillMen remains that you, the reader, should still be in control of the pace at which you absorb the story. That if it's motion comics, or if it's animation, or if there's voiceovers, or whatever, all of that sort of puts an element of time into reading. It takes the flow of the story away from you as a reader. You're not reading it to say, what makes comics a great immersive medium? Is that you are in control of the pace at which you enjoy the story. So that's what we're really proud of at ThrillMen. We've got a bunch of series, some new, some established. We've got in excess of 300 comics already on ThrillMen over the last 3 years. We've built quite the library. We're still putting at least one new comic up a week, sometimes two. And one of the things that we're proudest of is Empire, which is a story that Barry and I did our first chapter on it, our first volume of it was almost 15 years ago.
Right? Maybe that long.
Uh-huh. And it was an Eisner-nominated series, which I had forgotten until I went back and looked at the research. That's kind of cool. It was a story about how many people actually have seen Empire or know of it. If you haven't, that's cool, because I can then have the excuse of telling you. Empire was a series that Barry and I did in print about 15 years ago about Golgoth, who was the world's foremost supervillain. And we didn't want a story where the villain, we had to see the villain take over the world. I like the idea that before page one opens, he's already taken over. He rules the world. The question becomes, what next? What is your ambition now that all the trains are running on time and you are in charge and have realized that the problem with putting all the power on Earth on one throne is that ends up being the most dangerous place on Earth to be. So Empire we did in print. We've been trying forever to do a second series of it, a sequel to it. We've just not been in the same place at the same time, but when ThrillMen made the perfect venue for us, Barry and I picked up the gauntlet, and we've been working on it again behind the scenes ever since. And about 2 months ago, 3 months ago, we relaunched, and so twice a month there's a new chapter of ThrillMen, every chapter of Empire up on ThrillMen, and you can also get the original volume through the website or through the app as well to catch up. We have that. What else do we have? We've got upcoming. We have a series that I'm doing with Peter Krause called Insufferable: Home Field Advantage, which is the third part of our Insufferable trilogy, where we had a series called Insufferable and Insufferable on the Road. There's Peter Krause and I co-created a series about a guy who was a crime fighter, and he raised his teenage boy to be his assistant, and then the teenage boy ended up being a jerk. So when Robin grew up to be a douchebag, that's sort of that's your that's your synopsis there. And unfortunately, they're now they're forced to work together, whether they want to or not, even though they hate each other. Hence the title, Insufferable. One of the other things that we have as a regular series is a series called The Damnation of Charlie Wormwood. This is by Christy Blanche, Chris Carr, the writer, Chi, the artist, for the feature doing the lettering. Christy Blanche, why don't you tell us a little bit about The Damnation of Charlie Wormwood?
This is a story about a man who teaches in prison. I taught in prison for 8 years, so I collected lots and lots of stories, and my co-writer also, I would like to say we met in prison. I have to clarify. So we got together and had all these wonderful stories that our prisoners had told us.
Wonderful stories.
And we decided we were going to put them somewhere, and we decided to do it at Realmap. We pitched the story to them, and they loved it. And it's kind of got a Breaking Bad feel to it, I'm told. I'm staying away from Breaking Bad because I don't want to steal anything from it. So I will go on a binge as soon as the series is done and watch every single episode. But it's kind of moral decisions. You know, he's making all of these decisions, and he can explain to himself why they are the decisions, even though as a reader we're thinking, why are you making this decision?
Let me interrupt for the hook, which is basically the hook is, or do you want to go?
No, okay. No, you go ahead.
The hook is that Charlie teaches in prison, and that he has a photographic memory. So when you're a prisoner, when you've got wannabe crime bosses or would-be crime bosses or drug lords inside the system, and they're trying to communicate with their outside guys, they make a deal with Charlie. Charlie's a perfect guy to send communications back and forth with, because you don't have to write anything down. There's no incriminating evidence. You just tell Charlie, and Charlie goes out, and because his son is sick, he's motivated to play ball for the money, but then it becomes, that's only the tiniest tip of the iceberg of the story, because then what happens, it's like saying Breaking Bad is about, about Walter White, who is a chemistry professor. What I'm telling you, the tiniest part of what I'm telling you is how the story spills out from there, and what happens when Charlie realizes that, hey, wait a minute, if I control all this information, maybe I'm more important to this process than anybody realizes. Maybe there's power in that. So.
Yes.
Yes. So let's see. That's you've been putting that out every week. Let's see. We've got another series that we launched a few weeks ago by James Tynan, who you know from the ACL, which he does with Robin. You know from Batman Eternal and from other DC Comics work. And Talon and Woods and Boom. James is one of the writers who's most embraced the digital techniques and the way that it plays especially well with horror. Because again, with comics, right? If it's in print, the only place that can surprise you as a reader in a print comic is when you turn the page in the upper left hand corner. It's the only time I can surprise you because your peripheral vision's taken in everything else. But with digital, every turn of the screen, every swipe of the screen is a new page, and it gives you the chance to do some really interesting sort of black cat jumping from the shadows scares. It works in a lot of different media, a lot of different genres, but it works really well in horror. And The House on the Wall is about a college student who has these weird dreams about this keyhole in her dormitory wall that shouldn't be there, oughtn't be there. And then one day when she wakes up and starts digging, she finds a keyhole, and she finds a key, and she opens the house on the wall. And what she finds there is truly, truly horrifying. James is a very disturbed young man. We were also doing Out with the Alien, which is the other end of horror. This is a story about the universe's first intergalactic exchange student, and specifically for kids. And it's a story about Albert the Alien, a little alien boy who comes here and goes to school at the local junior high, and the hijinks that ensue there. Also for kids, and we launched this not too long ago, is Everstar, which is, again, it's really important for me to be able to do stuff across genres and across, not just R-rated prison comics, but also stuff that is specifically targeted for younger readers. And Everstar charmed me from the minute it was pitched. It was the story about an 11-year-old girl who grows up in Maine, works with her dad at the lighthouse, and then through circumstance ends up meeting the captain of an intergalactic pirate ship and takes cruises across the galaxy in its DNA straight. And just purely by luck, we didn't design it this way, but it's an all-female creative crew as well. That's not something we sought out to do because that, I don't care. I mean, I really don't care about, we neither discriminate nor hire on the basis of anything other than the idea. But I love the fact that this is, shows that we have, that we have some commitment to diversity. We also launched the deal with Top Shelf, where we're doing a lot more of their digital comics on the Throwback website, which I'm thrilled. And Top Shelf has been doing things like they did March, the award-winning graphic novel with the Senate. They've been doing so many award-winning things over the years. The first launch we've done through them is Motorcycle Samurai, which is up now, which is an interesting post-apocalyptic. Really, they use the techniques well. They use the techniques of digital well. It's a post-apocalyptic ride through the plains of a deserted United States, and it's, I'm not doing it justice. Yay me. And then Valentine, which comes to us from writer Alex DeCampi, who was one of the very first people to embrace digital comics years ago, and one of the people whose shoulders we stand on in terms of knowing what you can and can't do with digital. And Valentine's is a story set in Napoleonic France about a messenger who must get his important message back to Emperor Napoleon to turn the tide, but he falls into a realm of monsters and demons and horrible things. So it's half historical adventure, half fantasy, and it's really neat. And then we got Arcanum, which is done by John Rogers, our co-owner, but John also co-wrote three of the series Leverage on TNT. He's done The Librarian. He also, for Comics Guys, he co-created Blue Beetle. And John is doing a story that is, I think of it as X-Files by way of Once Upon a Time. It's a world in which, government agents and government operatives are suddenly coming afoul against magical forces. And so they have no choice but to turn to the realm of fantasy and fairy and so forth that everybody denies, but they secretly know exist, to find things to help fight that sort of thing. That's a good sampling of the stuff we have. We have a lot of other material on Throwback as well. For some embarrassing reason, I don't have yours up there, and I'm so sorry, Ron. I thought it was in the slideshow, and it should have been, and I apologize.
Right.
Tell them a little bit about what you borrowed on. Ron Randall, ladies and gentlemen. So I
years ago, I created a science fiction character called Trekker, which is a bounty hunter, and did a lot of traditional print comic stories of her. And after having left the series alone for a number of years, I was finally able to start getting back to it. A few years ago, I built a website and started getting the stories back on the landscape, and was just trying to figure out, like everybody was, trying to figure out how to use the digital form to help enhance stories and get visibility for properties and things like that. And then my friend Carl Kiesel got a hold of me. He had created a character called Johnny Zombie, which is a zombie. He's like a folklore character, sort of like Johnny Appleseed or something. And then Carl's conceit of the character was that you're never really sure whether he was real, if he was just a folklore legend, and people were sort of, projecting their own wishes or whatever about how to fight zombies. So every time Johnny Zombie appears, he looks somewhat different. And so on. Anyway, he called me up and he said, "Ron, I got an idea for the way we can have Johnny Zombie and Trekker team up in a story." And I thought that was just stupid because Trekker's world, there's no zombies, there's nothing supernatural, there's no question. And then Trekker's not a horror comic. It's a straight ahead science fiction story, very much just like that Blade Runner, Alien, Star Wars story. That's the sort of the world that I was building for Trekker. And I was skeptical, but then Carl says, "Well, let me tell you my idea." So he gave me this pitch, and it was plausible. We could see the story where there'd be that really, did this really happen, or was it just something that emerges in Claremont character. Sort of, you know, it was an imaginary episode. And I don't, Carl and I, we've been good friends and both been working in comics for, you know, over 20 years each, and we had very rarely been able to team up for anything other than maybe doing one image that I'd drawn or something. And I always wanted to work with Carl, so we started coming up with this story, and somewhere early on we realized that doing it digitally would be a fun way for a series to stretch, so we got a hold of Mark and Phil, and they were happy to do it, so that was great for us. And as Carl and I worked on it, one thing that Mark said is really true. I think that one of the digital form is really great for horror comics. And the other thing it's great for, I think, is comedy, probably, for similar reasons. It's all about timing and reveal and that sort of stuff. And, you know, since Trekker is getting crossing paths with zombies, the horror thing went as well. And so Carl and I first sat down, and he had written the script to be just as if it was a straight ahead, you know, static pages of comics. And I started thumbnailing and laying it out that way. And then as we started to think, oh, we could do this because of that, I call it the click to advance. I don't know if there's a more elegant name for that.
I think we're honestly still sort of defining
swipe.
Yeah.
Swipe for whatever. Yeah. Swipe comics. It sounds like you're stealing them. Carl and I just, we started to play with that. And I know it's true because Carl and I, we talked about how exhilarating it was for us because we were both, you know, storytellers. Like I said, we'd each been doing this in a static form for over 20 feet. And all of a sudden, it's like we had a whole new toy box to play with.
Yeah.
You know, storytelling is all about, you know, in comics, it's all about choosing the image and the words and selecting the right ones and the pace at which to reveal them or the side at which to give them stuff. And so having this entirely new way to deliver that, you know, that information, the sort of size bites that we could give you, we just kept going, oh, cool, we can do this, and sit down. And I realized that, too, usually when I lay out a story, I would just, you know, have a piece of paper and do a small version of the comic, a little thumbnail of it. But for this, I realized that we needed to treat it much more like storyboards. So each storyboard was, and even if, like, there are three panels shown at the same time and only one thing changes in them, I needed to make that another storyboard. So that we could then, we sort of did a rudimentary in Photoshop just where we could open one frame at a time and sort of see how it looked. And then we'd say, oh, well, we can do this instead of that. And we kept finding new possibilities and say, oh, we already used that little trick, you know, a couple of scenes ago, so let's not use that now. And sometimes you felt it worked great. You just, you know, deliver three image, you know, three frames or whatever at once.
Right.
It's like not every time that you swipe is there some fancy special deal. That's like, you know, when digital color first came in, every colorist was just doing every possible effect they could do on the page. And so we didn't want to overdo it. We didn't want to too indulge in it.
But here's a good example of this is very much what you could do in comics, except I like the way that this works, where when you flip and go to the next screen, now you tend to really change the composition, but you reveal some new piece of information. So, and I like the way you're controlling the pacing of that here. See, again, it's not motion comics, it's not animation. You're just tapping and moving ahead from screen to screen. But, yeah, this is great. So,
we had a lot of fun doing it. And another thing that you touched on was the idea that, you know, both Carl and I really wanted it to not do anything on approach animation or the use of sound or anything. Another way to put it, an additional way to look at it is when you're reading a comic book like this, swiping for on a printed page, you are actively involved in the storytelling process, right? You're controlling. If you want to dwell on an image of somebody's face or a long shot of a forest, you know, something like that, you can stay there as long as you want to, and you can populate with sounds or whatever you want to. You make those sounds. So you're active. And when animation is involved in it, or sound, then all of a sudden you lapse into that passive role. And some technology is delivering the story to you, and it fills up that extra wall where it takes you out of that driver's seat that I think you really need to be in with me as a storyteller to internalize it enough. So anyway, that's a lot. So I guess what I'm trying to mostly convey is that the sense that Carl and I had in doing this, it was, in a way, it was just a breath of fresh air. We were so excited, and we felt like we were kids getting our first comic job again. And hopefully that comes across not only in the story that we did, but I think that's true of a lot of people that are doing things in Throwback, because it's not a new language for storytelling, but it's maybe with a slightly different accent.
Yeah, exactly.
And you get to, and like I said, there's just new toys to play with. That doesn't at all erode or corrupt the form of storytelling that we're still really, really passionate about. You know, the images and words and the pace at which they're delivered.
Exactly. I mean, here's another really great example. This is one of my favorite things you've done in Empire.
This is an example of something which is much easier for the writer to suggest.
That's true. That's true. That's true.
For the artist to do.
But that's another panel, right?
Yeah. Right, exactly. But this is basically what you're doing. You're basically seeing what, and actually on the web version of this, on the online version, you can actually, is one continuous scroll. But basically, that's what you're doing. Is you're scrolling 180 degrees, 360 degrees around the battle scene and coming back to where you left it. So it's like, and so you compose this one giant panoramic panel, and that worked out beautifully. There's so many things you can do with a throwback format. So like I said, we've got hundreds and hundreds of comics up there. We're putting brand new stuff. We did The Empire goes up twice a month. Warwood goes up regularly. We've got Albert Ealing goes up weekly. Everstar goes up weekly. We've got new material all the time. Our model is that we want to make this as accessible as we possibly can. It's a subscription, it's a streaming subscription service like Netflix or Hulu for $3.99 a month, which is the price of one print comic. You have full access to not only all this new material, but the whole back catalog of stuff as well, which to me seems like a really great, I hate saying this, but it sounds like a
salesman.
The salesman, exactly, car salesman, but it's a really good deal. And $3.99 seemed like the sweet spot for us because that is the price of one basic monthly comic, and that seemed like a completely fair deal. So go to the website, throwback.com, or if you've got an iPad, you can go to the iPad app, and we're rolling out the Android app in the next few weeks as well. So we'll try to get it on as many devices as we can, but you can subscribe either place. And then there's also samplings of stuff if you're still not sure if you want to poke around and take a look at some of the new stuff. Both of the comics had at least the first chapter up for free, so you can take a look and see what you like. So there you go. I mean, it's, you know, thanks for listening to that part of the presentation. I mean, that's, you know, I wish we had Red in there somewhere, but that's okay. You can use your imagination. And Barry, what's the experience been like for you to work in this format? It's very similar, and yet you're always finding new things to do.
Yeah, it's actually been a sort of voyage of discovery for me, because a bit like Ron was saying, you know, I started off with the same way as I've been working for 30 years,
right?
And then slowly as we went into it, began to sort of realize there were more and more different ways of dealing with things. The surprise thing is, you know, one of the major things is you can just add panels.
Yeah.
And
well, also the fact that we're not constricted to that hard format of 20 pages of an issue, whether you like it or not, four or five panels a page, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
This is the elbow room that it gives us as creators. As a writer, I certainly find it very freeing to basically the scene, you know, the scenes can be as long as they need to be, and I don't have to worry about page breaks, I don't have to worry about, you know, constricted storytelling.
Yeah, one of the recent things we've done is I realized I said to Mark, we had a character kind of descending from one state almost into a hellish state in our mind. So instead of scrolling sideways, the panel actually scrolls downwards, so you fall into the insanity with it. Which, you know, you can't do in print. If you want to buy my booth, I've
you
got
could,
a,
but it would be a very print of it. You could do it in print, it'd be a very, very tall comic book.
Yeah. I say, if you drop by, I think I've got some nice art prints made.
Yes.
It's about, sort of, I think it's about 4 foot by 11 wide, four foot high. It's been fun trying to think of new ways to do things visually, but still keep it. I mean, one of the important things for me is, because, you know, I got into this through loving comics. the business, the whole thing for me is it still has to be like a comic, which I think we're managing to do.
I think we're managing to do, yeah.
Yeah, what I don't want it to do is, like Mark said, I don't want it to become an animation or...
No. No, and we're also sort of bearing in mind as we go, when I first started to grow, then I was trying very hard from the start to consider both digital and eventual print at the same time and try to do things in digital, but don't go too far because you're not sure how you're going to replicate that in print. And only about 2 or 3 weeks into that did I realize, well, that's a mistake. You know what? Just going to do it. Go for digital all the way and worry about the print another later. And that's what we've done. And now we are starting to put stuff back in print. We are starting to put stuff in print. Actually, the first bit that goes in print is the Damnation of Charlie Wormwood, which Dynamite is going to be publishing. It's a print comic collecting chapters. There's an ash can of the first issue that we got at the Dynamite booth later, right? And also our booth. If you want to take a look at what that translates to from screen to print, it was quite the editing job. It was quite the, you see all the, obviously you can't put every screen in a comic, or else your comic is 180 pages long. So you got to go, but you don't want to lose any of the story. So it took some creative editing to make sure that, you didn't lose any of the language, you didn't lose any of the dialogue, you didn't lose any of the moments, but still you sort of took the essence of the scenes. And we're going to have more and more of that as we go. I mean, we will have Empire in print sooner than later. We're working out the details now, but we will announce that as soon as we possibly can because that's one of the goals. But, that's going to be, a couple of afternoons of Barry and I on the phone going, okay, what do we do with this panel that's 5 panels deep? What do we do with this big, long one? So we'll figure it out. But there you go. I guess that kind of sums up everything I came to talk about. Are there any questions anybody has, or any thoughts, or any yes, please?
Just a thought. A friend of mine knows that I'm a horror junkie, and so he said, "Hey, there's this thing called Throwbend on the interwebs, and there's something. It's the 8th seal. You really need to take a look at it." And I fell for you guys, hook, line, and sinker with that, because just the idea, like you had said, where you go from page to page, but yet there's that, especially if you're a horror junkie, you're like, monster page!
Yeah.
And you don't get that, which I love, where it's, where if she's looking in the mirror, and she's looking in the mirror, then bam! And I absolutely adored that. I'm like, that, you're like, you don't know what's around the corner, and I really love that, and the fact that you're able to take that and translate it so well, even to non-war, where it's, you have no idea what's going to happen in the next, further down, and I love that.
Yeah, and Jeremy Rock is the co-creator and the artist of ACL, and I love what he's done. He's really, taken high advantage of the fact that, like you said, you never know what's going to happen next in this thing. So
it's hard to scare me, and I was like, "What?"
And you're still, because we do almost everything we do on the landscape format rather than standard portrait format. Because frankly, whether it's on your iPad or on your other tablets or on your computer screens or whatever, that's a pretty good size, and it scales up and down nicely. A portrait, as you try to try to read on anything smaller than an iPad, a regular comic, it's just teeny, and so it's hard to manage. So I really like the portrait format or the landscape format. I really like the fact that it gives the artist a lot of room to breathe. 2 or 3 panels of a page or splashes or whatever, a minimum of dialogue, and again the fact that because we're not locked into it's got to be this number of screens or that number of panels, this installment, then it does give us a chance to sort of let the story have some air in it. So, yes, sir.
You said it was love at first pitch for Everstar.
Yeah.
Are you guys actively looking for additional pitches, or do you see a point within the next 5 years maybe where you'd be able to do a
smash? We by the end of the year, hopefully, we'll be in a position to start looking outside pitches. We did the thing at San Diego this year where we made it an open pitch session to the room. It's a one-time only deal where we had people sign up and they had to pitch their idea for a one-shot Robin comic. The catch was they had 15 seconds in which to pitch the story. Now, it doesn't sound a lot of time, but at the same time, if you can't tell me in 15 seconds what your basic core idea is, then it's probably not going to be something that is compressed enough for like a one-off on Thrillbend. And to my stunned surprise, we had 100 people pitching. And to my even more stunned surprise, and this makes no sense to me as somebody who's edited comics for 25 years, and that is for every awful pitch in the world, there were no bad pitches. There were some that were tired. There were some that were a little familiar or some that were a little repetitive. But there weren't, like, nobody got up and pitched,
Monkey Hits Robot, the end. Or, you know, man goes up in a balloon and then he's a werewolf. That
nobody pitched that. And so, we, you know, that...
I read that, man.
Now, that's too bad.
It's a werewolf, that's right. I was just saying, it's a good one. It's true. But that's so...
Right.
So that was our first foray into that. We're, you know, and we pick a winner. We're going to do that guy's story later on this year. And then as we get closer to the end of the year, it's really just a personal bandwidth issue. I mean, Thrillbend is still only two or three people behind the scenes. And, you know, I've got a full-time job. So this is nice weekends when I can devote the time. I love Thrillbend, and this is my baby. But there's only so much... so many hours in a day. So, but we will. I mean, you know, and we encourage people to come to the site. We encourage people to sign up for the mailing list because we will, you know, we get people all the time with mailing list stuff, and that's going to be the first sign anybody has. So, yeah, we're opening the door to submissions. So, anybody else? Yes, sir.
$3.99 seems like a great price point for bringing in people to check out the site, especially kids, considering how expensive books are.
Yeah.
But how do you get word out to the kids? I ask that because I'm always concerned about, like, the next generation of readers.
You have hit upon the single biggest stumbling block of digital, not just the world, but digital comics in general, is that is the signal-to-noise ratio on the web of material and getting people's attention. That's the hardest part, man. And everybody told me going into this thing 3 years ago, this would be the hardest part. And I was like, oh, we can solve this. I was a fool.
And I think one of the things that surprised me is how little crossover there's been between the comic, physical comic reading public, and the digital reading public. So, I mean, I've only been at my table for half an hour before I came here.
Yeah.
I had at least half a dozen people come up to me and say, when are you going to do more Empire?
Yeah.
And I said, well, we're doing more Empire.
Exactly.
You are?
Where are
we getting? I mean, we use social media all we can. You know, we do, we beat the drum at conventions, we do panels, we tweet, we Facebook, we tell what we, and part of the reason we got so many different creators working on Thrillbend is the idea that a rising tide floats all boats, and, you know, your fan base is not going to necessarily overlap with my fan base, and so maybe you'll bring in some guys that... And so it's building. It's not, you know, it ain't a money tree. It's a building business, but we're just, at this point, I'm not sure what it's going to take to hit that tipping point of it becomes a self-sufficient, you know, publicity machine. Yes?
I would say, not that you should create towards an audience, yeah, but I'd say get together with the folks teaching with comics.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, went on a Fulbright scholarship to Germany and was teaching kids English with comics. Of course, certain had to be cleared with, you know, with the schools and what have you. But yeah, get areas where there are tons of kids with no means of escape.
No. But it actually sounds brilliant to me, because obviously all the schools have got a limited budget.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So instead of having to buy 30 comics for the kids,
exactly,
you buy one subscription and the whole class can...
Everybody's got an iPad, it seems, you know, for the most part.
That's a great idea. The tricky part is sort of gatekeeping in the sense that clearly... I want kids to come read Everstar, and I want kids to come read Albert Galien. I don't really want kids coming to read Dan Hastert or Charlie Wormwood. When we were doing stuff for free, the first couple of years, I want a lot of adults doing that. But when we were doing it for free for the first couple of years, before we set up a subscription model so we could increase the revenue to keep pushing forward, that was one of my concerns, and that was why we didn't have as much kids-oriented stuff on the site, because I didn't want anybody coming there, especially for free, coming there and just stumbling across it and then going, hey, mommy, what's a swamp donkey? That's in Wormwood, or what's a necrophiliac? Come on. So, yeah.
And could you not put in like a parental option for, like, if it was going into schools?
Yeah.
You did that partnership. Yeah. So
or let them select the ones that are available.
Control also. The kids can see on there.
You totally could. This is... Well, your teacher.
Then obviously the kids all go home and they sign up and they look at all the stuff they're not supposed to look at.
That's it. It's another selling.
That's fine for me.
Exactly.
That's fine. Looks like here we can't read.
So, anybody else? Any other questions? Oh, yes. Actually, we'll give
them. Sure. I was curious how the actual art is done. Are you drawing on PDF? Do you draw it on paper? Does it get uploaded? How does that work exactly?
Everybody's different, actually. You're still.
I'm still pretty much a traditional guy. So if you come by the table, I can show you. I've got a lot of Empire art with me. I can show you how it translates from the physical state to the screen.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are some things that I just do digitally still. I don't redraw every panel when we're adding little bits to it. So there's just one piece of art, and I've digitally add and take away things. But there's lots of different ways you can do it. It's like in Photoshop, you can have different layers. I use that for this, but I'll create physical artwork, but put it all on a different layer. And so that way you've got the option of fading things in and out.
And you want more.
I have sort of a hybridization too. I use Photoshop, and actually I use Mark Studio now.
I've learned many people like Dave here. So they can show.
it's tailor made, just good enough. But so I still like to end up with a physical piece of paper that has a final artwork on. But a lot of the leading up to that stages are done digitally on a drawable screen called a Cintiq. And sometimes then it's sort of the post production work. Once I got the page that I've been physically all scanned in the computer, and I can do cleanup and additional manipulation and stuff like that. It's just like digital comics is more sort of fluid than the static traditional comic page. Working to create those pages or the art digitally is a more fluid process. It's easier, it's more malleable. You can make corrections and fine tuning adjustments a little quicker that way. So it's good in a lot of ways. You can sometimes lose a little bit of the discipline and concentration that if you're one piece of paper and you got that project permanent ink in your hand, you got to be attentive to what you're doing. If you're doing it digitally, it's so easy to just hit the undo button. But I also like some of the limitations of using certain tools, like Tracker. When I first started doing Tracker years ago, for some reason I decided I've been used to using traditional tools of brushes and pens, and I tend to get very sort of noodly and rendery with them. And I knew I needed to be able to do it quickly because I was writing and drawing it. So I'm just going to use markers, it'll be a lot quicker, and they work. It's a much more limited line quality you can make with markers than you can with a really great brush. But I kind of like trying to work within those limitations. So, and one of the problems of digital, again, is you can use this is infinite number of brushes and thicknesses and touch sensitivities. You can spend all your time just trying to figure what setting you want to draw with, and not getting any drawing done. So sometimes just taking those options off the table, these are the three tools I'm working with, you actually find it forces you to be more creative.
Yeah.
So I like that.
Yeah. Other than the reverse is also true. Peter Krause actually started doing just pen and ink, as he always has, and then once he got to volume two of Insufferable, he discovered the Cintiq tablet and Manga Studio, and that's how it works now.
Yeah.
He does everything on the Cintiq with Manga Studio. You can't tell. If anything, for him, that's a sweet free thing. It got better. You can't tell any difference between the work, but it really just depends. All we need you to do at the end of the day is whatever medium you're working in, just send us a bunch of high resolution TIFFs, and we will send them to the colorist, and we will get it done from there. Yes, sir.
So outside of the website, are you still partnering with Comixology? And at the website itself, are there still some form of downloadable file you can get? At the time when you guys were doing it free, you had CBRs and stuff or ZBZs.
We're still partnering with Comixology. We'll bundle like 3 or 4 chapters at a time, put them under a new cover, and we'll release stuff from Comixology. And that's been doing pretty well for us. And we also are part of their program where they're doing DRM-free downloads, which I love. So that you can, once you get it on Comixology, you can download it to your own machine. You don't have to be online. And we're doing a lot of that with Roben as well. There's still free stuff to download, not absolutely everything, because it's creator-owned. Certain creators want certain things, and certain creators want other things. And I made it very clear that I want creators to be in charge of what they think, you know, how they want to present the material. There's also the option for some of the bigger sort of collections of stuff, like an entire season of something, for an inexpensive DRM-free PDF download. Those options are there as well. But basically, we're just, you know, we're looking at Comixology as a sales tool, and this is the monthly subscription where you can come and deep dive. So, yeah. And I think we're just about out of time, actually. I think if anybody else had any last questions, or anybody else here, anything they wanted to add?
One thing I want to add, just as somebody who's, as I said, with Pecker, it goes on Philbed, and I also have a website where all the comics, everything I've done, I've posted there for free. And the question that always comes up for comic creators is how to make a living doing comics, and when so much is available free digitally. So you can come by my table, the printed volumes of Pecker are there.
Exactly.
And because when you take one of those artifacts home with you, that's a way that allows people like myself and everybody up here to continue to do this, because most of us do want to do this for a living.
Yeah. We all recognize the power of publicity and the power of promotion and getting material out there as much as you can for free to hook you in. But luckily, I think we've moved into a 21st century economy where if you find enough fans, if you find your fan base, they will understand that to keep doing what they want you to do, that they're willing to pay a small but, you know, significant amount, you know, whatever it is. They'll buy your comic, or they'll visit you at your website, whatever. And nobody gets rich, but everybody gets paid.
Yeah.
So.
And I just said, you were talking about how when you started GoBand, you were trying to design the comics so they would work successfully digitally and also be ready to come out in print format. And you quickly decided that was kind of a crazy way to.
Yeah.
I love you to say, I wish Carl and I had been that smart, because when we were getting so excited about all the digital things that we could do with our story,
yeah.
At the same time, we were designing it so, okay, and because we always figured ultimately we were going to want to have it in a print format.
Sure.
So we were trying to almost format the story two different ways at the same time.
Yeah.
And my head was spinning and aching a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out how to make it work, so we're really exploiting the digital format really well, and also this could be formatted as a successful comic page.
There's
so you can see the results of that at my table also.
Well, Chrissy's working on a book with another guy. It's only the early stages of it, but he really is a graphic designer, and he really is excited about the possibility of not only at the same time, but also to try to do it where we can actually literally have it in print at the same time
as
on digital, where it's the same story, but the experience is different.
The experience is different.
You're reading this way, but with, you know, it just
so it's like the stained glass, so you've got, you know, on your computer screen, you're reading this and this, but when you see the whole page, it makes a whole new image.
Yeah, so I like this. There's the possibilities right
now. One of the first things that I have, this is a bit strange sentence, one of the first things I finally discovered, because I started off and I was thinking, right, now I'm doing it for the portrait-shaped screen, and you told me, you know, this is the dimensions of the screen. I was working out each panel to fill out the whole screen, and it eventually dawned on me that I don't have to fill the whole screen every time. If I just want a thin panel, you know, that's it, I can do that. Or if I want a long vertical panel, I can do that.
Yeah.
And that kind of completely changed the options to me about how, if we go to the print stage, I can already, as long as I think how I want the page to eventually come together, I can do it any way I want on the digital one.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, it was a revelation to realize you didn't have to be dictated to by the format you had. That's it's a big leap of faith to take to this raw used to working in, you know, in that portrait format with 20 pages an issue, and this is what you got. And now that we can blow the doors open on that, it's daunting. But
for us, when we talk about it, it probably sounds like we're sort of like talking shop and talking technically about this sort of stuff. But if we're doing it right, that's just us being excited. And so you don't have to sit there and wonder about the nuts and bolts that we do. Hopefully what comes across is that sense of excitement that we have about being engaged with the story in a new way. And hopefully on the other side of the screen, or whatever, you know, you're getting that same sense of, wow, it's like a little breath of fresh air, a new jolt, but just a slightly different way to experience these stories.
Yeah. You want to add?
Tell your friends about Grill Men.
Yes.
October 1st, Damnation Charlie Wormwood comes out in your local comic book stores, so make sure you order that.
And then downstairs, where you're at table 213?
Yeah. The other 213. I'll share this with you just because it's my favorite quote ever. There are two tables with the same numbers throughout the
whole. Okay.
But the reason the guy who all told us this is, there's only a finite number of numbers you can have, so we have to use that twice.
Well,
that's my quote for the day. There's only a finite number of numbers you can use.
So you're 213, Chrissy and I are 113,
and I'm about 211.
So you're 213.